Welcome. This is Jorge Facinetti, and you are listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. So, in the world of endocrinology, there are several types of specialties. As pituitary patients, we typically see, or at least we hope we can see, a neuroendocrinologist, or as it's also known, a pituitary endocrinologist. I say I hope we can see because according to a fairly recent article in Endocrinology Today, there is a significant shortage of endocrinologists in the U.S. that was first identified in 2003, but still remains a significant challenge. So we're going to assume that this shortage extends also to the neuro or pituitary endocrinology specialty. I think this will be a very interesting subject for a future podcast or article in Pituitary World News, so stay tuned for that. In today's podcast, we're going to talk to Dr. Blevins about the work he does in clinic and how this differs from a general endocrinologist. So, welcome, Dr. Blevins. Why don't we start by you telling us about your specialty?
Jorge, thank you. It's a pleasure to be doing another podcast with you. As you know, I am a neuroendocrinologist or pituitary endocrinologist, however you want to see it. I am a board-certified general endocrinologist, but have the subspecialty focus on pituitary disorders. And I don't see patients with diabetes and lipid disorders. I do occasionally see a patient with a pure thyroid problem or an adrenal problem, but the rest of endocrinology outside of pituitary disease is something that I don't contend with. Whereas most general endocrinologists see probably 80% of their patients have diabetes mellitus and another 10 to 20% have thyroid disease, and it's rare for them to even see a pituitary patient. I focus my practice on pituitary disease.
Okay, that's interesting. So tell us what you do in your daily work.
I manage patients with all sorts of pituitary disorders, and those with even suspected pituitary disorders or disease processes, including tumors, inflammatory and other disorders, cysts, hormone deficiency states, and so on. Many of our patients have surgical diseases, whereas a number do not. In fact, of the new patients that I see, probably only about one-third are surgical disease patients. The other two-thirds are patients that I'm managing. Maybe they've had surgery before, but they've been referred for often non-surgical pituitary hormone problems.
You mentioned tumors. Tell us about the types of tumors you see.
We see the entire spectrum of pituitary tumors. The most common tumor type we see is a non-functioning pituitary tumor. And then other tumors that we see in order of frequency are prolactinomas, acromegaly and Cushing's disease, then TSH-producing pituitary tumors. We often evaluate these patients to prove that they have the disease process, look at different characteristics by MRI to determine whether they might be benign, intermediate, or malignant, determine the most appropriate course of therapy, whether it be surgical or non-surgical or medical management.
Sounds like a lot of work goes into the evaluation of patients before you can make a decision on how to manage each patient. I suppose these are very fluid processes in that there are many factors that affect how a patient will ultimately be treated.
Yes, many patients require a period of 6 weeks or more to complete an evaluation. This is especially true in patients with Cushing's disease. And then, of course, we follow these patients long-term after their initial surgery or radiotherapy. And if they have residual or recurrent disease, we're involved in a more intensive degree with deciding whether they have additional surgery, radiotherapy, or medical management.
You mentioned hypopituitarism. Tell us about that.
Hypopituitarism is a state of one or more pituitary hormone deficiencies, and these can be either partial or complete deficiencies of any of the pituitary hormones. And we not only evaluate patients to determine whether they have that disorder, but also decide on the necessary or appropriate hormone replacement. I will do a future podcast on this particular topic because the Endocrine Society has just released a set of clinical practice guidelines, and those were interesting and would be important to review those with our audience.
Oh, that is excellent. I am, and I'm sure our community will be very interested in hearing more about what you have to say about those guidelines for hypopituitarism. Tell us about some of the other disorders that you see in your clinic.
I would say the most common other disorder we see is that of Erasque's cleft cyst, but we also see patients with pituitary stalk and pituitary inflammatory disorders and treat them with immunomodulatory drugs in conjunction with our neuroinflammatory group at UCSF. We also see patients with empty cella syndrome, Sheehan syndrome, see a number of patients who've had radiotherapy to the pituitary region, and we're following them because they have hormone deficiencies or will likely develop deficiencies in the future. Of course, we see patients who have diabetes insipidus, and many patients have a combination of all of those and are rather complex.
Well, none of this sounds like a typical run-of-the-mill clinic. I'm assuming that there are a considerable number of difficult cases. Why don't you tell us about those patients?
Well, let's take, for example, a patient with acromegaly who has invasive disease and has surgery to debulk the tumor but has residual and requires medical therapy, and we may have to go through two or three drugs to find the right drug to treat that particular individual. We have to decide whether or not to give radiotherapy now or treat later if the tumor increases in size. And perhaps that patient has panhypopituitarism and diabetes insipidus, so we're dealing with four separate hormone replacements in addition to dealing with the tumor and maybe medical therapy for the tumor and serially evaluating the patient to see if the tumor is going to increase in size, whether hormone doses are going to change with age, for example. So it can be rather complex and time-consuming to evaluate some of these patients who have complex pituitary disorders.
Wow, that sounds very complex, and I would guess unsettling to the patients, also having to deal with so many factors that it seems need constant evaluation and adjustment. It seems that is very similar to what an oncologist would do, no?
Well, in fact, it does. You know, we call ourselves neuroendocrinologists or pituitary endocrinologists, but sometimes I do feel like we are neuroendocrine oncologists as well. So that's very perceptive of you to say that and recognize the complexity of our work.
Now, let's shift a little bit. As you know, I see you in clinic, so I know that you see patients all day Tuesday, and you have two other half days as well. So let's see, you have four half-day clinic sessions. How many patients do you see a week?
In a typical week, I might see 40 to 50 patients. So it's very busy, especially when you consider the complexity of these patients.
Well, yeah, if each patient has multifaceted problems involving tumors and medical therapy, hormone replacement, and perhaps diabetes insipidus, it seems like a lot of work.
Yes, it is, Jorge. I like to think of it that 40 to 50 pituitary patients is probably like seeing 80 to 100 regular endocrine patients per week. It requires that much work. And, you know, the work that we do in clinic, you can almost double that because the amount of work we do outside of clinic involved in reviewing records, laboratory results, making treatment decisions, communicating with people, it really doubles the time that we would spend in clinic.
It sounds like so many variables affect how you look at each individual. It feels like it could get overwhelming at times.
Yes, at times it can be, but I'll tell you, Jorge, it's very rewarding to be helpful in this realm of this rare disorders, or group of rare disorders, to our patients. Furthermore, it's very interesting stuff anatomically, physiologically, pathophysiologically, and the tumor biology is interesting as well. So when you have the crux of an interesting set of disease processes and lovely patients that you really truly want to help, it's just so rewarding to be involved in this particular field and the work is self-fulfilling in that way, in that I don't really consider it to be work, but I consider it to be a joy to be able to function as a pituitary neuroendocrinologist.
Well, this has been a very illuminating look at not only what you do, but how you feel about what you do. I just want to thank you for all you do for your patients and for Pituitary World News, and for taking the time to do this inside introspective view at your work. It's really been very interesting.
You're welcome, Jorge. As usual, it's my pleasure to talk with you. Look forward to seeing you soon. Have a wonderful day, and want to say thank you to our listeners for following along, and as usual, please send us your questions and inquiries, and we'll do what we can to try to answer them online through articles, individual replies, or else through subsequent podcasts. Have a wonderful day.
You have been listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. This is Jorge Fascinetti. Thank you for listening.